Accession number 27237, Dr. Robert Navarsky, Reel 4. Now, after the phony war was over, and it was marked in some ways by this raid for you, were your squadron actually in action with this miscellany of aircraft?
No, we were not in action at all. There was no way that we could have taken any action. First of all, the aircraft that we flew there were really not armed anyway, and they were only there for really training purposes, nothing else. You see, the pretty dilapidated, old-fashioned French aircraft, I suppose, of the early 30s vintage, really, that was the... there was no... But, nevertheless, first of all, flying the... You could not... By that time, the Germans have advanced from the north, you see. And there was no way that you could fly from Lyon to southern England. The range was too great. It was too far, you see, for the aircraft to fly. You couldn't... You wouldn't have enough petrol to get there. The only thing that you could fly actually across that would have been some of the twin-engine aircraft that would have long enough range to do that, you see. Now. But we thought that if we could fly across to North Africa, and we were certain that France would continue fighting from North Africa. But when we landed at Marseille, the station commander would not give permission for the aircraft to be refueled. He said, "La guerre est finie," and that was that. So the squadron had to be disbanded, and that was the end of my French Air Force escapade or whatever.
So, I mean, how many of you were there? That we were all Polish.
We were all Polish.
So, you were a bit stuck here in Marseille.
We were stuck in Marseille, yes. And we didn't know how the war was progressing. You see, we knew that the Germans must have been near Paris or whatever, or probably in Paris by that time, because nobody was saying anything. You see, officially they didn't say anything. And we said we must get to North Africa so we then went to there was nothing you could do from Marseille, so we went on to Perpignan and to Port Vendres, which is not far from the Spanish border on the Mediterranean side, and we thought, well, if we can get a little boat from there to take us to Oran or Algiers, and if not, if the Germans would come, then we could hop across them to Spain and be interned. You see, there's nothing else you could do. So, but we did get a little boat at Port Vendres that took us to Oran. There must have been about, I suppose, 40 or 50 of us on that boat.
What was the trip like?
Oh, just a crossing. There was nothing like it. I suppose took a day or day and a half or so, or a couple of days. Don't quite remember by now. And we went to Oran, and they put us on a train to Casablanca. And then at Casablanca, we went to the British consulate there, and they put us on a coaster to Gibraltar. And Gibraltar, there was a...
Any of these journeys have any incident, or were they all pretty routine?
Pretty routine, there's nothing very much.
So you got to Gibraltar at the back end of June, 1940, from the looks of this.
Yep, yes, that's about the time, yes. Got to Gibraltar there, and very soon afterwards, eventually about 3 or 4 days, the convoy... I never got actually into Gibraltar itself. We were deposited on a ship, and that was that. There were a number of ships there forming a convoy to go to England, you see. And eventually, after 3 or 4 days, the convoy has left, for England, there must be quite a number of ships. And first of all, we thought we were going to the States, you see, because it seemed to have been sailing due west for the first 3 or 4 days, and then sort of northwest, and then north, and eventually ended up in Liverpool on the 13th of
July.
July. Yes, 13th of July, 1940. And things went absolutely like a clockwork from there.
What were your first impression? Because it's the first time.
The first impression actually was great. Really, I'm not being funny. It was really great because you see, we didn't know what to expect at all. We couldn't speak any English at all. And we were marched from the from the dockyards there to to Exchange Station, I think it was, in Liverpool, and we were put on a train there, and you had your seat numbers, you had your seat reserved, and there was a cup of tea waiting for you, and some sandwiches, and after about half an hour, said the train left. And we were very impressed with the actual organization, you see, that somebody actually has expected us to come, and it was already there with a cup of tea and your seat reserved and thing there, you see, and you then thought, oh Christ, that organization, you knew that they would win the war, you see, it was just like that, you see, there's no. So it's quite funny, actually. So, great, really great impression, actually. You know, as opposed to France, you see, where you at the end of it. as opposed to France, you see, when everything was so disorganized, you see, you saw great hoardings on walls, you see, in France, and it said. Nous pouvons gagner la guerre parce que nous sommes plus forts. You know, it means we must win the war because we are stronger. Nothing of the bloody sort, you see there, right? And then a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, you see, and it's finished there in France. You see, that's how much stronger they thought. You see, it was now. So coming to England, then, you see, and seeing what was happening here, and how organized the bloody thing was, you see, it made a great impression, actually. I mean, we knew that was it. That was all right.
You put on a train. Where was the train going to?
The train went to near Gloucester, Innsworth Lane. There was an RAF station. Also, it's a receptacle for, a reception base for Poles at that time, because there were quite a number of them coming, you see, so anybody could have come on the bloody ship, so they had to verify your story, first of all, who you were, and what you were doing. And
can you tell, what was the interrogation like? Because you could have been, I mean, a lot of people are coming in with dodgy stories, I mean, you know.
Of course.
You could have been anyone.
Yes, or you could have been anyone.
What sort of interrogation did you get?
I don't quite remember. I mean, it was very friendly, there was no, and I suppose at the, you also had, there must have been sort of officers before, and they who knew you, you see, oh, he's all right, you see, or something, and you see, no, oh, I know this job. You see, rather than say, well, I've never seen him before, I don't know who he is. So from that point of view, there's no, they were all very friendly, and also, at that time, when it took about 10 days or a fortnight, we were getting sixpence a day.
And you were given a British rank, weren't
you? Yes, AC2.
Aircraft and second class,
yes. Which the official pay then was 2 shillings a day. Because your shillings are a bit before your time, but 2 shillings a day, you see. Now, but provisionally we got sixpence a day, you see, to tidy ourselves. Right? So after 10 days, you then had all the back pay, you see, to make it up to 2 shillings a day for whatever you were. And that was how you were issued with. With your AC2 uniform and shoes and everything else.
Now, How long were you at Innsworth
Not
Lane?
Very long. I think for 2 or 3 weeks, I think, at Innsworth Lane. I don't think I was there longer than that. We are then sent to Blackpool. And of course, at Innsworth Lane, you see, now, they started teaching us English straight away, you see. So in daytime, you see, you had English lessons straight away.
Now, English isn't always easy. I mean, how did you find it, English?
Bloody awful, actually. Really, it's. Tell you what's the trouble with English, actually, is for a foreigner. I could, after about a month, or certainly, or 6 weeks of learning quite intense English, you see there, I could read a paper, and I could understand what was in it. Or I could read something, you see, now, but I couldn't pronounce the bloody things, you see, there. Because, it's there's no rhyme and reason to pronunciation, you see. For example, more, M-O-R-E, but then you have more park, M-O-O-R, you see. Now, you have a goose, but I can think of
it's a lot the of lack of a phonetic structure.
Absolutely, you know, no phonetic structure. So, and
you were used to, and you found French and Polish had a.
Absolutely, yes. Now French, German, French. There are rules that they don't deviate from it. Same with Polish, is absolutely phonetic. Every letter V is always W is always V. No matter where it is, you see, and I is always I. Like I, for example, you can have a mile, M-I-L-E, right? But you have a mill, it's the same bloody I, and you pronounce it differently, no why. You see, so from that point, you're always stumped, you see, to begin with. And that was, unfortunately, before the days of where they could actually teach you English as they do now, with earphones, and you actually learn the spoken English straight away, which is a different story, you see. And if you have the text in front of you, then you know what's happening.
Now, this Blackpool was it Blackpool Airport? Well,
No. We were actually billeted in different houses in Blackpool.
What were the billets like?
They're very nice. You see, there's no, I suppose, in ordinary boarding houses for that in summer they would have their summer holiday traffic day. You see there. So we were just put
in
those.
Were the civilians still in there?
Oh yes. Oh yeah, well, there was a landlady there. You see there, of course. You see now, and. If she had 10 rooms or whatever you see it was, you would be probably 2 or 3 to a room anyway, and you would be fed there as well and all that. You just know, and then you would then go to lessons. You see, to a central place.
And you
to dances at the Winter Garden or whatever.
So where was the actual airfield you were flying from?
Nowhere. At Blackpool there was no flying from Blackpool.
Ah, right. So you were sent.
I was only sent there to learn English. And of course, we also had lectures in sort of aviation, you see, that sort of thing as well, you see there.
So what was your next move then?
The next move, I think, from Blackpool. Was, oh yes, and then we had to go to London to go for a medical.
Now, what do you remember of that? I mean, you've been to a
well, I know, I went to Northolt, I think it was. Yes, Northolt. Northolt.
What about your conversion course? Because you had this.
And that was before. That was afterwards. You see, the conversion course was afterwards. I went to Northolt. First of all, you had to have a medical. You see that you were all right. Now after that, I went on a conversion course where you.
Now where was that at?
It was at Hucknall near Nottingham.
Now Hucknall Airfield.
Yes, Hucknall Airfield. Yes, yes.
And that's an RAF station, isn't it?
I was an RAF station. Yes, 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 yes.
Now, tell me about the conversion course, because we're quite interested in how did they start you off? Because you'd already learned to fly on gliders, then you'd learned to fly on the French aircraft.
Yes. Now, there you see, we started flying on Tagimoses. And I suppose we all did at least about 20 hours or so. First of all, with an instructor, you see, after a few flights, you were let solo on the Tagimoth, and then you flew just ordinary tasks, you see, to usually do a bit of local flying or aerobatics or go a bit of formation flying or whatever. Not formation flying, not on Tagimoths, no.
Now, what was the Tiger Moth like? Because
very nice. It was a lovely aircraft to fly. It was a very nice aircraft to fly, actually. It was very responsive. It also looked good, you see. You felt like I suppose a little bit like a sort of First World War fighter pilot, you see, on a Tiger Moth, you see, when they had twin wings and that, you see, and because that's more or less what they looked like during the First World War, you see, and it was quite a good performance, and it was very good for ordnance of aerobatics. It was a lovely aircraft to fly, actually, yes, and oh yes, we all loved it, actually, yes.
How far did you get in aerobatics?
You do all the different sort of prescribed figures, you see, you do slow rolls and quick rolls, you see, and loops and other things. There's no.
You've got all that. Was there any difference between French controls and British controls? I'm sure the answer is no. I mean, aircraft controls must be the same.
Not all that much difference. Actually, there's a bit of difference. Actually, is that the main thing was that it was all metric. You see, in France, but here you see you had to. It was all in knots and when it comes to speed, you see, and feed when it came to height, you see. But I mean, you soon got over it, you see. That wasn't too bad.
The next stage looks to have been fairy battles.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, they're quite a famous aircraft as well, and quite notorious.
Yes.
What were they like to fly?
Well, that was actually to introduce you to a more advanced aircraft, you see. There was also a two-seater there, you see, with a twin controls. Really to show you how the flaps work.
This is a monoplane.
Oh, the monoplane, yes, a lowing monoplane, how the flaps work and what do they do, and the undercarriage you could put up and put down again. Otherwise, it was pretty ponderous, really.
To fly,
yes. It was a big thing, you see, big heavy things, really. And only one engine, although the engine was very good, it was still quite a sort of ponderous sort of thing to fly. But it really to introduce you to modern, more modern so designs, you see, with
rather than the biplane and
and
the third aircraft you seem to have done was the Hurricane.
Yes.
That is it. I mean,
that was a different story altogether. It was a lovely, and in comparison, there was no comparison between the ones that you have flown before and the Hurricane. It was very responsive.
Lots
of guts. And more gas than anything you have flown before, you see. Very maneuverable and very forgiving. You see.
What do you mean by forgiving?
Is it right? Well, if you made a mistake that could end up in you writing the aircraft off, you see, or something, well, you could remedy it quite quickly, really. As long as you are not too low, you see, you would get away with it. It is no, as with some aircraft, you wouldn't. You see, from that point of view, it was a lovely aircraft to fly. Yes.
Could you? I mean, Can you? I don't know whether you can picture the layout of the Hurricane cockpit now. I mean, what instruments did you have? What controls? It's just because the Hurricane's so famous, we're asking you. It is difficult to do this. I mean, but what was in the cockpit?
Well, with the cockpit, but you had the main instruments there. You see, with your airspeed indicator and your height indicator, how high you were, and you also had a. An instrument for showing you whether you actually were going up or going down. You see there, and you had, of course, you had the compass there as well, and you also had a gyro, which you flew more on a gyro actually than a compass. You see there.
Why?
It was easier to use, really, and it was more visible. You see there.
What did the gyro? I mean, was it a gyroscopic compass or?
No, it was. Difficult to explain. Like within, well, you had a compass that you know roughly where you're going, east, west, or whatever you see there. But you could set the gyro, and the gyro would be much more accurate. Say, if you set it onto fly onto say 270, which would be say due east, due west, rather. Then it was easier to maintain that direction rather than in a compass. You see, the needle would be swinging a bit, 10 degrees one way, 10 degrees the other. You see, but not on the gyro. You see, and also you had a variable pitch control for your air screw. You see, for your air screw.
What would you use that for? That's to vary the pitch.
Vary the actual inversion of the propeller. You see now, the finer the pitch, the more bite you got into it, and the coarser it was, the less bite you get into it. But on say cross country flying, you see there, you would use much less revolutions. You see, to maintain the speed. But say for takeoff, you would always have a fine pitch. So that was in any of the aircraft would go the same with Spitfire or anything else you see there. You would to give it the proper bite. You also have more control over the actual speed you see with the fine pitch than you have with the coarse pitch you see there.
That's the instrument.
Yes.
Any other instruments?
Then you had all this of your temperatures of your cooling system and your oil temperatures that you have to watch your radio thing. You see, you had the radio there as well. You see, but you
so you had a radio. Would you be wearing headphones?
Oh yes. No. Yes.
Or would they in your helmet?
Yes. They would be in your helmet. You see, your helmet would be there, and your microphone would be here anyway all the time. You see, and you.
And that was built.
You would have it on all the time.
And that was built into your helmet.
Yes. The earpieces were built in, and so was the microphone. Actually, I've still got mine.
Now, what about the actual controls? I know
exactly the same.
So there'd be the joystick.
Yes, the joystick and the rudder. You see there, and yes.
And it was very responsive.
Yes. The controls are more or less the same in every aircraft. Yeah, there's no difference between say.
Now, were you introduced to the weaponry of the Hurricane at this stage? I mean, were you given any practice firing?
Actually, we knew what we were supposed to do, but at that stage of development, actually, I was were not really introduced on how to use the. You see, the Hurricane at that time had 8 machine guns, 4 in each. For each wing, you see. At that time, we didn't have the air gunnery thing, you see, because for that, you had to go to the coast, really, so that you'll be firing into water.
So you knew what it had.
I knew what, yes.
You probably knew which button to press, but you hadn't done it.
Yeah, we have, no.
Now, anything else about the Hurricane? You didn't meet the Spitfire at this time.
No, you just were
a Hurricane man.
Yes.
Was the Hurricane clearly better than anything else around that you'd met? Better than the French ones you'd seen?
Better than anything you'd seen? I couldn't compare the Hurricane to, say, the Watin 520. Because we have never flown it, you see, but it was certainly much better than anything I've flown before. Yes, until I came to fly Spitfires, you see, which again was, in my view, was better than the Hurricane.
So, you, on September the 10th, you were posted. To
I was posted to 303 Squadron in Northolt here as an auxiliary pilot.
Now, what did auxiliary pilot mean?
That means I was not an operational pilot. I was a dog's body. I would have to have done quite a bit more flying before they would let you fly operationally, you see, I've only done one flight in a Hurricane when I was in the squadron. Then on the second aircraft, on the second flight, we were supposed.
Now hang on, just before, because we'll save that. I think. So your job was basically just to fetch Hurricanes fly them about, gain a bit of flying experience, but not to go into action.
No, quite right.